You're listening to Scarves Around the Funnel, brought to you in association with Forest Hepburn and McDonald's Signs.
Getting noticed isn't always easy, because there's so much noise.
But at Forest Hepburn and McDonald's, we make it easy. With standout signs, business cards, shop fronts, banners, leaflets, vehicle graphics, the lot. Showcasing your products, advertising your brand, and getting business noticed. So, what can we do for you? Forest Hepburn and McDonald's, creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. Visit fhmcdsigns.co.uk.
Kingsley rolls to the boys. Back to Kingsley. Curls it twice. Lovely effort.
2-0!
No! Kingsley magic!
Hello and welcome to Scarves Around the Funnel, the podcast dedicated to Heart of Midlothian Football Club. Finally recording back-to-back wins against Celtic in the league since 2006. That was a good year. And we're hoping that 2024 will be a good year as well. I'm Laurie Dunsire, delighted to be joined by Mark Donaldson.
Hello, Laurie, how are you?
I'm good. I'm a wee bit under the weather, but... And that's not just for the celebratory drinks after the win against Celtic. Mm-hmm. But, I'm very happy from a heart's perspective. And after the derby, we sort of had a quick... message back and forward, are we going to do a podcast after that? And not that it was a terrible result or anything, but you know, after the Rangers game, it wasn't the reaction we're hoping for, so we held off and we were hoping that maybe we'd have something more more exciting and positive to then react to in the game against Celtic, and we were treated with exactly that.
I think it was a momentum saver. Because going into the Rangers game at Ibrox, hearts were absolutely flying, and they took a thumping, deservedly so. And they weren't great against Hibernian. And if they'd lost against Celtic, then it would have been I've got to go to Morton now. But they won, and they deserved to win. And we'll get into that with you, with Scott, about the Celtic game and the decisions as well. But it's got us back, and now you can look at it and go, yep, it's still only one defeat for Hearts since that Aberdeen game on the 9th of December. So it has kept the momentum going, and I'm now looking forward to a wee trip to Capello on Monday.
Yes, and as you mentioned, another man joining us who I'm sure will be glowing after that fantastic performance at Tynecastle on Sunday, Mr. Scott McIntosh.
Evening, guys. Yeah, looking forward to discussing Sunday. I was a little bit worried that after holding back on the Hibs episode that it was maybe going to be a double dose of negativity, but the team really surprised us on Sunday, and it's great to be sort of back on winning ways.
So you're not starting indeed with a diatribe, are you, Scotty, about Brendan Rodgers this week?
I was going to maybe follow up with another hearty fuck you to him, but to be honest, he's got his own problems to seek just now. I'm sure the SFA will be inviting him round to their offices very shortly. I see that the Yang appeal was rejected.
Yes.
That just came through not that long ago, which doesn't surprise me. Even if there had been any sort of strengthen the argument, they tend to double down unless it's obvious that they can't. So, I think that was always going to be on the cards.
Despite the fact that back on the 2nd of January, when Celtic went to St Mirren, Brendan Rodgers felt that a stud to the eye clearly merited a sending off. He said after the game, "The guy's not meaning to do it, but of course if you're taking a stud in the eye, it's dangerous play. It was clearly a red card." But then when his player does something similar, it's not a St Mirren player, it's a Celtic player, it should only be a yellow, and it's a disgraceful decision. Yeah, that's come back to bite him in the arse, is it not?
But Brendan Rodgers doesn't like to moan about referees. It's not what he does.
No,
plus, I think if they're going to fan the flames and have a sort of individual to be sort of targeted upon by their supporters, they're probably going to prefer it to be someone out with of Parkhead rather than in it, especially a young player who's still trying to find his feet like Yang. So I do think there was a bit of, I think there's a little bit of intent and motivation behind these comments afterwards. I think he was trying to probably protect...
Deflection as well.
Yeah, I think he was trying to protect one of his own players, which is fine. Many managers do it, but at the risk of putting someone else's livelihood at stake, I felt sort of naming and shaming John Beaton was definitely out of order.
We will talk about the Celtic game, about the decisions. Before we get into that, I thought it would be good to touch on the Edinburgh Derby, though. It's not going to be our main focus because obviously a lot's happened since then as well. But Heart of Midlothian did play Hibernian, which is always an important game for both clubs. Now, the result, a 1-1 draw, does mean it's only one defeat in 14 derbies for Hearts now. But three draws in a row at Tynecastle, just two shots on target all game. Mark, I think it's one of these, like I said, it's not a terrible result. You know, 1-1 in a game we didn't play that great in. But it didn't feel like we got the reaction we were looking for, did it, after the Ibrox match?
No. And at times we have bounced back well from defeats, and other times we haven't. And this was one of those. Let's be honest here. I know we all wear maroon and white scarves, and I know we have maroon-tinted spectacles. That was an embarrassing decision to give Hearts a penalty. And imagine the seethe if it had gone against us. So to get that, to get a little bit fortunate a couple of times recently, a handball against Dundee and then the decision against Celtic as well. You take them when they're going your way, because damn right, there's going to be times when they're not going your way and you're frustrated. But yeah, if we hadn't have got that, I don't know, because given our second half displays of late, I would have been optimistic that we would have got back into that game, but we never really kicked on after that that goal. And the number of chances that Hibs had, and a few cleared off the line as well. We got 4 points from three difficult games. You would probably think it would be a draw against Celtic, a win against Hibs, and a defeat at Ibrox. It's just a slightly different way. I would have liked it to have been 6 points after that Rangers game, but it wasn't to be. And you know what? I think we look bigger picture here, because if you look at the minutiae of the game against Hibs, which we're doing, and then we'll go on to the Celtic game, it would have been a lot harder to take if we'd lost that game. We didn't. We're currently as close to second as we are to fourth, and it's not a bad position to be, albeit it would have been nice to get a couple more points against Hibernian.
Yeah, Hibs went ahead through Emiliano Marcondes, who I thought was actually very good for Nick Montgomery's side. And yeah, the big talking point was late in the first half when the penalty gets awarded. And I had a bit of debate about this afterwards, because I said at the time, I didn't think it was a penalty. I thought it was very, very soft. And I think how I compared it would be that if that was Martin Boyle at the other end of the field, with the exact same scenario, I think Hearts fans would have been thinking very differently about it. But many Hearts fans felt, you know, there was contact and that was enough. I guess the big thing from this, Scott, is, you know, we got the penalty. I think you've got to give Lawrence Shankland a lot of credit here, don't you? Because the shenanigans that went on between the penalty award and him taking it were ridiculous, some of them. We saw some of the items that were getting chucked on. I didn't actually realise the full extent of it until afterwards when we saw some of the videos and pictures. I think to keep us cool like he did and step up and dispatch such a good penalty, I think that says a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, just a man in confidence. And, you know, he puts the penalty away so well. I mean, you know, Marshall guesses right, but he's just got no chance, given how sort of high up it is and sort of pace that it's got as well. I think going back to the penalty, I have a degree of sympathy for Hibs fans, because I think as football fans generally, we do tend to view tackles in the box a little bit differently to outside. So we do tend to use that term soft quite a lot. Now, if a player gets body checked anywhere else on the park, a free kick gets given and no one really says anything about it. So for me, the fact that it happens in the box should be immaterial. It shouldn't really matter. But I think, and this isn't just Hibs fans, like I say, and you've said correctly, Laurie, if it happened in the other box, we would all be crying foul as well. So I do think that I've got a degree of sympathy, but it is technically a penalty.
I mean, where are we going with that? We're going to get 20 penalties in a game. And I'm with you I've spoken to referees before. I said, look, if it's a free kick outside the box, surely the same infringement inside the box is a penalty or a higher bar. I said, that's not in the laws of the game. But it's like when a cross comes in from a free kick or a corner and the nonsense that goes on, it's 99% of the time it's given in favour of the defender. I think Kevin Clancy's seen something that's not actually happened. I think he's seen a swipe that hasn't happened. I think he saw Will Fish and seen what he's done. And then when he's asked to look at it again, once he goes over, I'm thinking, nah, no chance. So for him to basically double down, it's just the inconsistency. And I know it went in our favour this time, but we'll go on, and Scott's been helpful as well with a couple of things with regards to Hearts Celtic decisions in the past couple of years with regards to VAR that we'll talk about later on. But when you've got another chance to look at that, it's not a penalty. And we take it, and look, you can discuss this all day. For Lawrence Shanklin to take the type of penalty that he did, given the three that he missed, that for me tells me his confidence level can't be much higher. Because this is a goalkeeper that's decent at spot kicks. Remember the Serbia-Scotland game as well? So he's an imposing figure. That was a brilliant penalty, but we were very lucky to get it.
So 1-1, and I think you've got to compare it as well. I know Hibs fans will be talking about the fact that, you know, Hearts aren't as great as they're made out to be. But I think when you look at it from our angle, it's a game where Hearts didn't play particularly well. Hibs played, you know, I should probably say as well as I've seen them play in a derby for quite some time. Still didn't win. And when we last met Tynecastle, Hearts should have comfortably won that game. So, you know, it's just what happens in these games, isn't it? Sometimes it's these moments. It's moments like that that sort of, and Hibs missed chances when they could have scored, and Hearts dispatched a spot kick when it came their way. So I think ultimately you can talk about performance and chances, but it's the scoreline at the end of the day in a derby that's what matters.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to say also that every fixture for Hibs over the coming weeks is a cup final in terms of, you know, cementing a place in the top six. So I do think there was a degree of a lack of decisiveness from the Hearts team on Wednesday, and Hibs seemed more sure about what they were looking to achieve and what they were looking to do. And I think that ultimately resulted in the number of second balls that they won, and just how better they sort of pressed and harried the game. So,
Scotty, I thought the intensity levels from Hearts was poor to begin with. That surprised
me. I think, and we'll go into touch on this when we compare that to the Celtic game. It ultimately came from the press. There was a real lack of press from the Hearts team on Wednesday. Now, we might have had three or four bodies within that area, but they weren't cohesively pressing as a team. And what also happened was the centre halves were less physical and sort of touch tight on the forwards as we were on Sunday. So that sort of created this huge gap that sort of Neuenhoff was trying to almost plug on his own at times last Wednesday. I do think that lack of a press definitely hindered us. And to be fair to Hibs, they were good. You know, they probably let us off the hook a little bit, because when they went 1-0 in front, I do think either through instruction or through that kind of unconscious just retreating back 5 yards that sometimes teams do when they score, they did tend to go into their shell a little bit for 10-15 minutes, and that allowed us to build up a bit of momentum prior to the penalty.
So a share of the spoils in the Edinburgh derby, which isn't the end of the world for Heart of Midlothian, because we had bigger fish to fry at the weekend. You're listening to Scarves Around the Funnel, sponsored by Forest Hepburn and McDonald's Signs, who have been offering creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. So Heart of Midlothian at home to champion Celtic, who had the opportunity to go back to the top of the table. We'll have a quick listen back to this one now.
So a change of penalty taker for Hearts, maybe slightly surprising after Shankland dispatched his one during the week. He scored his last two. That was after three he'd missed. But it will be George Grant in front of the Roseburn stand to take this one. 2.5 minutes before the break. Grant against Hart. Grant steps up and scores! Cool penalty from George Grant into the bottom left corner. Joe Hart went the wrong way. And first blood to the men of Maroon. Third of the season for George Grant. Hart of Midlothian 1, Celtic 0. Scales wins the header but picked up by Lemba Kisa. Now Shankland steps away from Scales. Lovely play from Shankland. Now to Nieuwenhoff in the box. Always slipped. Back to Shankland. Right foot! Oh, Shankland! Picks out the bottom left corner. And it's surely now. Goal number 27 is in the bag for Lawrence Shankland. Nieuwenhoff slipped. Shankland did it. Wonderful finish from the number 9, the main marksman, the best striker in the country. And it's Hart of Midlothian 2, Celtic 0.
Right, so this is the game that we really want to get our teeth stuck into. We'll start with the team news itself. Hart's made 5 changes from the side that drew with Hibs 1-1 in the derby. Kent Atkinson, Devlin Vargas and Fraser coming out. In came Sibic, Lemba Kisa, Benny Beningame, Grant and Forrest, and Hart's going with a 3-5-2 formation. Sibic, Kingsley and Rolls the back three. Lemba Kisa right, Cochran left, Nieuwenhoff, Beningame, Grant in the centre, and Alan Forrest supporting Lawrence Shankland in attack. Now we're going to talk about the team and the performance in a few minutes, but I'm going to break this down into 2 sections. I want to talk about the big talking points, the refereeing decisions, first of all. And then we'll talk about the Hearts' performance. So I've got a couple of emails that we received actually in the wake of this game. So I'll start with the first one, which is from Graham Fulton, who says, how much did I enjoy that? I thought that all the big decisions today were marginal, apart from the Celtic penalty, which should have been a foul to Hearts. While the boot in Cochrane's face might not have been intentional, it's a straight red card. The outstretched arm may also have been unintentional, but it allowed Celtic to clear the ball soft, but a penalty. Didn't hear Brenda talking about the red card that Cochrane got against them. Totally accidental and engineered by the Celtic player. Despite not being the last man, off he went and it changed the game. Now it's a conspiracy, apparently. Hearts, Hearts, glorious Hearts. So that's from Graham, who messaged us after the game against Celtic. So like I say, we'll start with the 3 talking points out with the goals, of course. So first up, the Celtic penalty, which has been conveniently forgotten about by Brendan Rodgers and those of a Celtic persuasion. So ball slipped through to Yang, who gets into the Hearts penalty area. He does well to get into position, to get onto the ball potentially with Alex Cochrane chasing back. But my initial reaction to this was that Yang has basically initiated contact with Cochrane.
Yeah.
And then gone down. And I have to say, I was, shouldn't be maybe at this point, but I was stunned that Don Robertson pointed to the spot so quickly and so decisively.
Yeah, it's not getting overturned either, because it's not seen as a clear and obvious error when different angles suggest different things. There's one clear one from behind the goal that shows that Yang has initiated the contact. But the other angles suggest that there's a little bit of motion. It's a wrong decision. There seems to have been, at that end, Kyogo went down rather softly a couple of years ago, and Alex Cochrane was shown a yellow, and it was upgraded to a red, which was a nonsense for denying a goal-scoring opportunity. And it just felt like Groundhog Day. Oh, it's Celtic at home. We concede early. It's usually a penalty or something. It's usually at that end.
Alex Cochrane isn't having much luck.
Alex Cochrane's normally involved. It wasn't a penalty, but it's not going to be overturned. And we'll get into VAR. It's not even a case I can see why he's given. I mean, this is the thing. Some people say Don Robertson should have been asked to take another look. Let's break that down a little bit. VAR would say to Don Robertson, what did you see? Don would explain. And if that's pretty much what happened, he's not going to be asked to take another look. It's when VAR says, I think you might have got that wrong. What did you see? And he says X, Y, or Z. And the VAR says, well, no, that's not what happened. Why don't you come and have another look? That's kind of how all that works. But when Don Robertson kind of says what he saw, and it kind of mirrors what actually happened, then it's not a clear and obvious error from what he's given. Even although it sounds weird, but this is the whole way that VAR works. I didn't think it was.
But they don't stick to that, though. That's my
issue. No, and it's the inconsistency.
The clear and obvious error thing is not stuck to at all.
And that's the thing. Like, a friend of mine who I used to work with, a guy called Tony Haggerty, a big Celtic fan, used to work for the Daily Record. He does the Celtic equivalent of the Hart Standard. I think it's called the Celtic Way. So I listened to a bit of his podcast. He said it's a nonsense decision as well. And Tony's pretty fair. Very Celtic-minded and Celtic-biased, of course, but he can see both sides of the story. And when he says it was ridiculously soft for Celtic to get that penalty, and that's coming from green and white spectacles viewed through those, not for me, but it's given. And it kind of set the tone for mistakes aplenty by the officials.
Yeah, it was an incredible few minutes here, because obviously Celtic get the penalty. It is not overturned, unfortunately, and it gives Adam Ida the chance to give Celtic the lead. He tries to play it down the middle. I thought Xander Clark did really well, actually, not just to block it, but to get it clear. But we're talking about decisions just now, so we'll get to all the other things in a few moments. But in terms of the next decision, it was moments later when the ball's bouncing out of play in front of the Wheatfield stand, and Yang puts his boot up to go for the ball. Don't think there's any doubt about that. He is trying to go to the ball and catches Alex Cochran around the face, between the face and shoulder area. And very quickly, Don Robertson flashes a yellow card for a high boot. And I have to say, when I watched it from the back of the Wheatfield when it happened, my initial reaction was, yep, probably looked maybe about right. And then you get a replay. And actually, you see, okay, that wasn't Cochrane kind of ducking down and catching a boot 3 feet off the ground. That was the boot at his face to head height, with him barely stooping. And sure enough, Don Robertson gets sent to the screen for this one. And the yellow card is upgraded to a red card. And Scott, this one's the biggest controversy around this one. Rightly or wrongly, I think wrongly, but this is the one that Celtic are really unhappy about. As you mentioned earlier in the show, it has already been thrown out, their appeal over this one. But Brendan Rodgers really not happy. How did you view it at the time when it kind of happened at the game when you were watching?
Yeah, I mean, again, during the game and when you've got that split second to watch it, I can completely understand the referee maybe flashing a yellow. And I think VAR were right to get Don Robertson involved, and he was right to sort of change his mind about it. I think what this incident brings up is an overall issue with ex-players being pundits and making reference to player incidents like this and red card moments. I think too many of them want the game to be refereed slightly different. They want it to be refereed maybe to when they were playing 10, 15, 20 years ago. I think the problem is that very few of these players understand the letter of the law, and they definitely do not understand the concept of endangering an opposing player. So I heard from a number of ex-pundits, a lot of them I enjoy listening to. I mean, Neil Lennon's an example. Neil Lennon's actually a really good pundit, generally speaking. But Neil Lennon got caught up in the whole argument about malice. Malice has nothing to do with it. Malice would be a really hard thing to actually
judge prove that?
As well. It would really open up the floodgates about interpretation, which is what everyone's moaning about when it comes to the inconsistencies of refereeing in general. The other one that he came up with was, he's not that type of lad. And it's like, these things don't matter. I get it. And I have sympathy, because even Ryan, when Ryan came into the pub after the game and he was talking about the incident, I think you can get that sense from current pros and ex-pros that they're reluctant to hammer down on this, because I think they're scared that the game's becoming non-contact as it is. So they do like to sort of talk about intent and malice quite a lot, because they don't want to be seen to be you know, viewed as purposely injuring players. And I don't think they are, especially Yang. I don't think Yang's purposely looking to injure Cochrane. Cochrane just, he almost comes out of nowhere. You know, he goes in there with a heady steam. And all Yang's trying to do really is just sort of try and flick the ball over his head, I think. But that doesn't take away the fact that it's endangering an opponent. And the amount or lack thereof of contact also doesn't hinder on it. So I do think Don Robertson does the right thing once VAR points him to it. But I do understand why fans get... why it comes across as quite a contentious decision, because fans are sort of hanging their hat on what they're hearing from respected professionals. And I think this is why there's so much controversy whenever these reckless and excessive forced type red cards are handed out, because you hear it all the time. Michael Stewart does it quite a lot. Neil McCann does it quite a lot. You know, it's the majority, not the minority of ex-pros that fall foul of this. And I think they've got to take a bit more responsibility in future with this and maybe learn a bit more about the letter of the law.
Well said. Michael Stewart struggles with the laws of the game, has done on two or three occasions this season. And when you do that, those watching and those listening at home, basically, if the pundit says it, then a lot of them take it as gospel, when a lot of the time it's wrong. Now, I like Michael Stewart as a pundit. I like him as a person as well. But you can't have that. You can't have someone who, he probably knows a lot of the laws of the game, but there have been times this season when he's been on BBC or broadcasting on Premier Sports or Viaplay or whatever, there have been instances when he's got it wrong. So going back to what Brendan Rodgers said, you can't have an opposition red card in January for the St Mirren player when he got shown off, Olesanya, when he got sent off, and then not have it for that. This is Law 12, okay? Fouls and misconduct. And I'm a nerd because I carry the laws, but you've got to have the main crux of a foul and the careless, reckless. You've kind of got to have it, right? So a tackle or a challenge that endangers the safety of an opponent or uses excessive force or brutality must be sanctioned as serious foul play. So it's a red card. Now, nowhere in the laws of the game does the word intent appear when it comes to something like this. So of course there was no intent. He's not that type of player. Well, Yang probably isn't that type of player. And yes, it wasn't. It was more mistimed than malicious. But we go back to the way that the laws of the game are written, and we'll get to that in a second about the stupid handball law right now, which is horrible. A tackle or a challenge that endangers the safety of an opponent or uses excessive force or brutality must be sanctioned as serious foul play. That endangered Alex Cochrane's safety. That's the bottom line. You've got to remember as well here, Don Robertson, after being called over, we saw it with Willie Collum at Motherwell, Don Robertson has the final say. Not John Beaton. John Beaton can advise, but the final say will always be with the referee. So they've discussed it. Don't know what was said, but ultimately Don Robertson has decided, okay, John, yep, I take on board what you've had to tell me. It probably does fall into that category. It should have been a red straight away. Don Robertson could have said, nope, I'm staying with my decision. We've seen that before. But it was a red card that was given. And I think correctly. But Brendan can't have it both ways. You can't have January, St Mirren player should be sent off, and then March, fast forward 2 months, and the Celtic player should only get a yellow for that. Come on now.
So obviously Celtic then down to 10 men, and the next big talking point was the penalty that was given to Hearts late in the first half. Not a moment that you saw many claims for from any Hearts players, to be fair, as the ball is knocked away from the box by Tomoki Iwata. You see a replay, clearly hits his arm, but not really, wasn't really aware of the ball or where it was. Mark, what did you make of this one then? I think it's one, and I think I said it in commentary, that you can see how it's given these days, but I don't like that being given as a penalty, in all honesty. We'll obviously take it from a Hearts perspective, and we've had plenty of dodgy decisions against us when we've played Celtic, but in isolation as a penalty, I don't like that decision, because I don't think there's an awful lot of advantage gained there from Iwata. He doesn't mean to knock the ball away. He doesn't mean to hit his hand. He's been nudged by his own player. He's kind of falling over. His arms flop out. It's what happens. That's one I can understand why they'd be unhappy with that.
Totally. Alistair Johnson's gone up for the clearance with Iwata and nudged him, as you say. And it's his, when he's nudged, he's trying to support himself and trying to fall down in a natural position. And the ball has struck the arm. This, for me, isn't about John Beaton or Don Robertson. This, for me, is about the way that the laws of the game are written right now. And I know that Gianni Infantino and IFAB met at Loch Lomond at the weekend prior to going to the St Mirren-Aberdeen game. And they've ultimately, over the last years, they've made a mess of this. And this took me back to covering Serie A for the first time when they had VAR introduced for the first season. And honestly, this was given as a penalty. Everything like this, if the ball hit the arm, it didn't matter, intent or no intent, even although intent doesn't appear in the laws of the game. Everything was being given. Now, Dermot Gallagher on Sky said pretty similar to what you've just said, but he was talking about how, on the whole, this season, that has been given in Scotland. Doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it right. Now, Brendan Rodgers, I know we've had a go at him for his comments on this podcast this week, but he's right. They should have had a penalty at Motherwell if that's what we're doing. Dundee should have had a penalty against Hearts if that's the way we're going. So it's not been officiated like this all season. You take it, but the problem here is not... I mean, this is something the ref hasn't seen. The referee... is then asked to go over and have a look at it. Again, he could say, no, not for me. I think he should have done, but I'll take it. But I don't know what Scott thinks about this one, Scotty. But this, we'll take it, but we got
that. Yeah, I think I'm in agreement with pretty much what I've heard from everyone up to this point over the last couple of days. Now, to a degree, the referee is following the letter of the law, but the aspect of the situation which should even change the letter of the law is the nudge from his own player. So as far as I'm led to believe, that does impede on whether you should be given penalties in that situation. Now, I'm of the belief that no one should get a penalty for that type of situation. But again, I understand that referees are in a situation where they've got to follow the letter of the law. But as far as I'm aware, that nudge from Johnston should deem it, you know, worthy of not being given. So yeah, I mean, on all sorts of levels, it's probably the most ridiculous of the three, if we're being completely honest. I mean, the Celtic penalty was reasonably ridiculous, but that is probably the most ridiculous decision of the two penalties.
Okay, let's move on to other items in this game beyond just officiating. We got an email from Claudio Berbecci. I'm going to go through this now. It's a bit of a longer one. He says, "Hi guys, that was fun, wasn't it? So many talking points after Sunday's game, so please regard this email as a mixed bag. I have to start by thanking Laurie for his love-struck oh Shankland exclamation when Shanks made it 2-0 for real in the second half. Up until that point, I was tensely and somewhat uncomfortably watching the game on my mobile while zombie marching through a crowded airport. After a low-key fist pump, no fellow travellers were hurt. I let out a hearty and prolonged chuckle, picturing Joe Shitebag Hart uttering the same words but in a very different way while picking the ball out of his net. It was then I knew we were going to win and wasn't too worried by evocations of past meltdowns. I felt great for the rest of the day. In my irrepressibly good mood, I started thinking how myself and lots of other Hearts fans have perhaps been unfair towards Xander Clark, who kept repelling Celtic through the match. We obviously wanted him to help the team, but I felt some of us were more or less consciously waiting for him to slip up so we can get to see Craig Gordon reinstated as Hearts number one. The fact that Xander didn't fold after the Rangers drubbing and bounced back with two very good performances in the space of a few days should, I think, finally command the full respect and appreciation from the Hearts faithful. We still have a legend at the club, but we also have a number one. There's not just one and the same anymore, so kudos to Naismith for perhaps being the only one to realise this. The key moment for me was when Clark prevented the game from going down a familiar path in Hearts versus Old Firm matches. A gloomy one blighted by recrimination, bowed heads and wounded silence with rueful thoughts of, ah, here we effing go again. Instead, Xander managed to summon his inner Buffon and expertly left his legs in the path of Ida's tame shot. Clark was clearly the man of the match, so if I'd have to stamp a headline on this game, it would probably be, oh, Xander. I also wanted Craig to replace Xander after the Rangers fiasco when he did let in two soft goals, but after the Celtic repeat, I don't see how Naismith can do that for the remainder of the season, so I really hope we go all the way to the cup final, as Craig also deserves some more game time. He goes into a few other things, which are largely on the refereeing decisions, which I don't want to get too much into. But he does mention also good to see condescending Rodgers chastened again. His team can't deal with adversity, so this is exactly how we need to play against him while he's there. Though sadly, we may not get many more chances to do so the way he's steering the ship at the moment. Keep up the good work, and he says, eat, sleep, beat Celtic, repeat. All the best, Claudio. So there were lots of positives in this game, and he starts with Xander Clark, and you know we've said on this podcast we've not hidden from the fact that we felt that Craig Gordon should be put back in, that he's the better of the two players, but you can't really argue, Scott, can you, with how Xander's performed, especially in that Celtic game. I thought he was fantastic.
No, and that's twice now he's responded really well to sort of minor blips and moments of adversity. You had the sort of Aberdeen Rangers spell just as Craig had returned from his injury, where he'd had a couple of, he was possibly culpable for a couple of the goals during that period. He'd done well, really solid for a couple of months. Like we mentioned last week, Rangers game, there was one or two that weren't full-blown errors, but because of the sort of standing that Craig Gordon has amongst the fans at the club, we were sort of looking at one or two and going, oh, would he have got to it? So that you were starting to think again with the Hibs game coming up, is it maybe worthwhile making that change? Kudos to Stephen Naismith though for not doing it. And Xander Clark's came back and I thought he was brilliant on Sunday. Reactions were really good. He's got a good presence, Xander Clark, in terms of his stature and that. I think he's sometimes a bit reluctant to come off his line and show it, but I felt like on Sunday he was more decisive. You know, he was sort of off his line and sweeping things up and that quite a lot better than what I've seen from him. So if that's something that he can add to his game, then all the better for it. And you've got to sometimes put the emotion of what Craig Gordon's achieved in a Hearts jersey aside and look at Xander Clark as a longer term option for Hearts, given his age. And that's potentially what Stephen Naismith's doing as well, in terms of having to make these decisions on a week-to-week basis. So fair play to him. I thought he was excellent.
It's a tough problem to deal with, Mark, but in some ways it's a nice problem to have, isn't it, having two such talented goalkeepers who could both be on a plane to Germany in the summer?
I think they both will. I'm intrigued to see what Steve Clark's Scotland squad looks like for these March friendlies and whether Craig Gordon's called up or not. I hope he is. Xander Clark has to be. 14 league clean sheets in 29 games. I think if you were going to make the change, it should have been made after the Rangers game. And it wasn't. Was that a gamble? No, it probably wasn't, because you've got a guy who's in form. He was maybe guilty, as Scott was saying, of one of the goals. But he's built up a relationship with those in front of him. And yeah, I agree with what Scott's saying. We're looking kind of, I want Craig to be back in goal. He wants to be back in goal because he wants to be in the Scotland squad for the Euros. I think it's doable for, it sounds crazy, for Hearts to have two goalkeepers in the Euros squad. I think it's possible because right now you're taking Xander Clark over Liam Kelly, and Xander played over Liam Kelly at the tail end of last year. He was picked ahead of him by Stevie Clark. So I think your decision, and forgive me, I don't know what the situation with Angus Gunn is right now, but assuming he's fit and available, certainly for the summer, then he goes. If Xander stays in his Hearts league goalkeeper and goes the course, 14 clean sheets and 29 suggests he probably will, then he'll go. I'm taking Craig Gordon over Liam Kelly at Motherwell, just for his experience as well as everything else. So I would love to be in a position where Hearts finish the season comfortably third, hopefully win a cup or get to a cup final, certainly with Craig either leading the team out of Hampden or certainly being on the pitch as vice-captain, even though he's a club captain to Lauren Shanklin for the cup final. But I would love it if both Craig Gordon and Xander Clark were part of the Scotland squad for the Euros this summer.
Now, we do have a guest waiting in the wings to come and chat to us about the next game. So we don't have as much time as normal maybe to go into a huge amount of depth on the other items in the Celtic game. There's certainly some other things I want to touch upon. You know, Lawrence Shanklin, now 27 for the season. Steve Clark watching on. Scott, he's making it pretty hard for Clark. I know he's got his kind of favourites and types of players he likes to play in forward positions, but very hard to overlook someone who's, you know, pushing 30 goals for the season. We're only at the start of March.
Yeah, I think it puts a bit more pressure on him getting it right. What I would say about it is Steve Clark up to this point has got it right because we've qualified. So regardless of maybe different opinions on forward players, I think it's fair to say that the likes of Shea Adams and Lyndon Dykes bring something to the table because they can potentially get more out of the likes of John McGinn and Scott McTominay coming from a deeper position. I think the issue is going to be if that sort of stops, the first thing that people are going to aim at Steve Clark is, why are you not playing the man who's hit 25 to 30 goals this season? So it's a difficult situation for him to be in. I mean, he's definitely booked his place on the flight now. He should definitely be in the squad. I'm hoping he gets some minutes in the friendly so that he can actually show that he is quite underrated in terms of some of these play outside the box. Now, I'm not saying he's capable of being someone who's going to run the channels in the way that sort of Adams and Dykes can, but I do think he can play up front on his own, and I do think he can bring others into the game. So if there's a way of doing that, and if there's potentially a way that Steve Clark can slightly alter his style of play, then who knows, maybe by the summer he will find a spot in that team.
In terms of other performers, with so many good performers, I think Callum Neuenhoff was fantastic again. We've really seen what he's all about now. I think we've spoken about it previously, but I think doing it in a game like that against a good Celtic side, don't get me wrong, a Celtic side that are obviously missing one of their best players in Callum McGregor, but I think Callum Neuenhoff has shown that he can do it at a decent level now as well, isn't he?
I must admit, when I saw our team selection, I was kind of hoping, and this was before I realised that Callum McGregor wasn't starting for Celtic, I was really hoping that we were maybe going to play Cammy Devlin in an advanced role and maybe stick him right on top of Callum McGregor. Pretty similar to what Hibs have done in their two home games against Celtic this season, where they've kind of played Dylan Venti in a more withdrawn role and had him sort of sitting on McGregor when Celtic have been in possession. The way that the game transpired with a Iwata starting and then also with Celtic going down to 10 men, it actually worked out better that we had Grant, Neuenhoff and Beningame on the park, because I think there was a greater degree of control. And I think that's something that it was probably the most impressive thing about the display on Sunday. Given all the contentious decisions, it would have been really easy for players to have maybe got involved in the heat of the battle and maybe lose their discipline a little bit. But that was one of the most impressive parts of the Hearts game on Sunday. We actually controlled the game pretty well. We were aggressive when we needed to be in terms of our press and in terms of the back three, sort of making sure that they were nullifying Celtic's threat. But I think Neuenhoff and Grant and Beningame brought a certain level of control. I think I was reading one of the Hearts Standard sections today, and they were talking about the fact that after Hart scored that second goal, Celtic only got about two touches of the ball or three touches of the ball for the next 2 minutes, and that's them taking their kickoff. So Hearts, there was a maturity to that performance, and it certainly showed that there's a real good sort of coaching nous about Naismith as well, and that was probably one of the most pleasing aspects about Sunday.
Laurie, can we look bigger picture here just quickly? I still don't think Hearts are near where Stephen Naismith wants them to be. And for Hearts to be in a position right now where they get a deserved win over Celtic, just one defeat at Ibrox since the 9th of December, yet they're finding a way. I still think they're... Imagine it's a car, there's five gears. I think Hearts are third gear right now. And I think Stephen Naismith is optimistic and pretty confident in his own ability that he can take Hearts into fourth gear. And then depending on summer signings and during his time in charge, I think he thinks that he can take Hearts beyond that as well. I think this is an evolving Hearts team. The way that they're playing, have they been great in all these games? I thought they were decent on Sunday. I thought it was an average Celtic side. Without Callum McGregor, they're a totally different side, but it was a deserved Hearts win. And in no way am I belittling what Hearts are doing right now. I think it's fantastic to be 13 points clear of the chasing pack from fourth downwards. But I like the way that Stephen Naismith's going about this one and his calm demeanour after a victory, not shouting from the rooftops as if to say, well, we expected that. A lot of other people outside the football club and outside the fan base and outside the squad maybe were surprised that Hearts beat Celtic, but we're not. And I like that about him. But I think privately, if you asked him, if fifth gear is perfect, nothing could go better, and first gear is trouble, where are Hearts right now? I think they're between third and fourth. And I think that's pretty promising because it still shows they've got a lot of progress still to make under Stephen Naismith. And I think he's looking forward to that challenge of taking Hearts from third to fourth gear, if that's where we are right now.
Absolutely. Other positives, just a quick run through Alan Forrest. I thought put in a power of work again. Dexter Lembekisa made it 8 wins from 8 games as a Hearts player.
That's frightening.
One of the concerns maybe on that right hand side.
The reverse Gareth Bale. Eh? Remember Gareth Bale had that run with Spurs when he first signed, where I don't think he won in his first 30 games or something. So it's almost like a reverse of that.
And I thought
I'm not sure they've ever been in the same sentence before.
Gareth Bale and Gareth Bale.
Yeah.
We'll find out. Defensively, I thought, you know, having Kingsley move into the centre, I thought he was operating often as a sweeper in that back three. I thought he was terrific. And Toby Simic, who hadn't played in a month, I think lots of players we've seen at Hearts and other teams, you know, if they're not involved, they can become a problem. He doesn't strike me as that type of person. Mm. I thought it was a really good display for someone who's been a bit part played at times this season, but to be thrown in such a tough game. And I'll be honest, you know, it was a concern for me, concern for many people, that kind of side of the defence. But I thought he was really good.
Yeah.
Against quite a physical Celtic striker in Adam Ida.
Well, not just Ida as well. One of their best players when he's on form. Bearing in mind, Daizen Maeda was chosen in the Japanese squad for the World Cup ahead of Kyogo Furuhashi. He's a super player, Maeda, and he was very quiet, whether it was Lembekisa or whether it was Civic.
So a big win for Hearts, putting the champions to the sword. And as I mentioned, first time we've had back-to-back league wins since 2006, but first time since 2000 that we've seen two of them in the same season back-to-back. So very positive stuff. And we're now going to be joined in just a few moments by someone who can preview Hearts' next game, because he actually used to play for Hearts and currently plays for our next opponent.
Forrest Hepburn and MacDonald have been making creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. For more, visit fhmcdsigns.co.uk.
This week, we are delighted to be joined by a returning guest on Scarves Around the Funnel, a man who played 137 times for Hearts and was a cup winner in 2012. Alongside one of our regulars, Mr. McGowan. But we're delighted to be joined by Jamie McDonald, who is not only coming to us as a former Hearts player, but as a current player for Hearts' next opposition, Greenock Morton. How are you doing, Jamie?
I'm good, thank you, Laurie. And yourself?
Not too bad. A little bit tired after an enjoyable Sunday afternoon following a win against Celtic. I'm sure you've been there as well, celebrating post-match, especially during your time at Hearts.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, not always a regular occurrence, unfortunately, but when they do come along, it's obviously a good day. And I believe that was back-to-back wins over Celtic.
First time in the league since 2006.
Yeah. Yeah, so fantastic achievement for the current squad. They're obviously been going really well this season, and it's a great result for the team at the moment.
And Ryan McGowan was making the most of it, being out afterwards. Obviously, you were a former teammate of his. Was he always one who wanted to make the most of opportunities to go out and celebrate after a game?
Yeah, I think Ryan's partial to a night out, shall we say. Especially in his younger days, I imagine that's not really changed too much. Well, I suppose it probably has changed a lot. You know, we're all family men now and whatnot, and things change. But Gowser, I can imagine would have enjoyed that if he was playing in that, and definitely would have been out in the tiles after.
Well, things have changed, but also Craig Levein has changed as well. They've got 2 days off after a 1-1 draw at home to Livingston. What on earth is going on now? Gowser's making the most of this. He's ripping the arse out of this.
He's obviously had a word in Craig's ear, hasn't he? Must have swayed him somehow, because that's definitely not the Craig Levein I know anyway. I think days off were few and far between back then, but he's obviously softened up in his old age.
I think you've been on this podcast as much as Ryan has in the last 2 years. So it's like your second appearance in 2 years. And I think I remember, Laurie, was it back in 2022 the last time Gowser joined us?
No, he turns up after St Johnstone have won, or if he scored a goal, he can't wait to get on. he picks his...
Not very often, then.
Exactly.
Nowhere to be seen when St Johnstone lost to Hearts.
He picks his moments. So, Jamie, talking about yourself, how are things with you then? Because you were with Raith Rovers last time you came on, I believe. You made the move to Greenock Morton at the start of this campaign. How did that come about, and how have you found the move along there over to Greenock?
Well, obviously I left Raith Rovers the end of last season, and to be fair, the manager, Doug Emery, approached me in the summer, and had a good chat with him. Obviously, wanted me to join at that point. It was, you know, it's probably late June. And I kind of politely told him no initially, because I was worried a little bit about the travelling from Edinburgh to Greenock and how my body would cope with it. But, you know, I had a few things that I was waiting for and hoped to happen in the summer didn't quite materialise. I had a week in South Africa also, where I thought I fancied a wee change of scenery. Was thinking about going on a South African adventure, which again kind of declined due to family circumstances.
Mrs. Singh, you're not leaving me with the kids to go to South Africa.
Pretty much, yeah. Now, I was one of the ones, you know, as to be fair, she was really supportive and was like, look, go and give it a try, see if you like it. And, you know, if it comes off, say if you like it, then we'll make it work. And whilst I was over there, there was a few things that happened at home. My daughter broke her arm and things like that. And it was just one of these things where you're not just an hour or two flight away. So I'd went over, and as I say, a few things happened at home that, made it apparent that it wasn't just a case of you're just an hour or two away, you're a good full day's travelling away, and it wasn't for me, but I'm glad I went and did it. You know, there's no regrets. I think if I didn't go and at least try it, that would have probably have been more of a what-if moment, and might have had a few regrets, but I'm glad I went and at least tried it. So I've came back to there. Morton at that point had got someone else in, Ryan Mullen, who then picked up an injury, and you know, Dougie came back on the phone asking if, you know, I'd be interested, and you know, at that point, you know, it made sense to kind of make the move.
What's next for you, Jamie? It was a 12-month deal. If obviously if another year was offered, I'm sure you'd be interested, but have you thought about what's next after you eventually hang up the gloves? Do you want to stay in the game as a coach, or maybe something different?
I'd like to, you know, this season hasn't gone as well as kind of way I would like it to. I started the season at Morton, was doing okay team had a few injuries, weren't maybe getting the results that we probably deserved. You know, we've got a really good squad there. Picked up an injury. Ryan's been in, the team's picked up. You know, we're having a really good season. Obviously, in the quarters against Hearts next Monday, we're sitting, I think, fourth in the league at the moment in the playoff places with 10 games to go. So, you know, it's been a relatively good season. I managed to play a couple of games there again. But, you know, myself, I'm still struggling, which I knew I would with the travelling. But I think the one thing I do know is I want to keep playing. You know, I think having that little spell on the sidelines there is kind of reaffirm my hunger to keep playing for a little bit longer. You know, I feel I've still got a lot to give in terms of the playing side and feel I can still play at a good level. But regarding afterwards, you know, I think very much like to get into the coaching side of things, but probably more youth level. I've started actually doing a little bit at the Hearts Academy prior to me getting injured. Just helping out with some of the academy stuff with the goalkeepers. And, you know, that's something I quite enjoy. You know, I think there's a lot of satisfaction, you know, taking the kids, them listening to you, the actual, you know, seeing the developments and the improvements in them. And that's definitely a line I would like to go down.
You're 37 now, you turn 38 in April, but you're a relative bairn compared to Hearts goalkeeper Craig Gordon, who's just signed a new deal. 41 at the moment, will obviously turn 42 before the end of this year, right at the end of the year. Is that something that you would want to kind of emulate? I mean, goalkeepers obviously have quite a bit of longevity at times. You kind of look over at Craig and think, you know, if he's still doing it, then 41, 42, there's no reason why I can't still be doing it.
100%. I think over the last few years, we've seen that. Obviously, Craig himself still playing, coming back for obviously a horrific injury over the last year and still having that hunger and desire as I talked about still wanting to play. You know, Alan McGregor only hung up the gloves last year. I think he was, 41 himself. Even across the city rivals at Hibs, you know, you've got David Marshall, who, again, will be approaching 39. I think, and still playing obviously at a good level.
He's about to turn, I think it's this week or so actually, I think.
Right, well, you know, it's good to see, you know, obviously they've been at the top of the game for a long time, but you do always get a little bit longer as a goalkeeper. And yeah, as I say, I think having this little spell on the sidelines is, you know, I've played for the last almost, prior to my injury, you know, I think for the last 3 and a bit years I'd played constantly. You know, I've played about 160 games or something like that in this last 3.5 year period. So I've missed it. I have missed being out for that. It's only been a short period, but I've definitely missed playing, you know, the buzz of just training, to be honest. You know, it's not until you get back on that training field and, you know, you start making saves and things again, you realise how much you missed it. And you know, what a fortunate position to be in as well. You know, probably getting a bit older, you know, you appreciate things a little bit more because you know that it isn't going to be long before you're retired. And, you know, people always say that, play as long as you can because you're a long time retired.
What's it like as a goalkeeper playing on a surface at Capello that earns Morton so much money because they actually grow potatoes and then sell them underneath it? It's that bad.
It can be challenging. It just as most pitches are, you know, we obviously don't have that luxury of playing on a fantastic multi-million-pound surface every week. But you know, it's a proper old-fashioned football ground, Capello. You know, I think when Hearts go down, you know, a lot of players probably want to experience something like that. It's a proper old-fashioned stadium, old-fashioned kind of pitch. But, you know, it makes for an interesting game. And as I say, it'll be a proper old-fashioned Scottish Cup tie, I'd imagine.
It's a brilliant venue for a Scottish Cup game, isn't it? A quarterfinal under the lights. Just a shame, I suppose, that it's not at the weekend. I mean, Hearts would, I don't know about how ticket sales are going, but a Monday night's not easy for so many people, even to get through the M8 in Glasgow in time for a game that's live on TV. That'd probably be the only negative about this one, Jamie, in that it's not a Saturday or Sunday, and you could get thousands upon thousands of Hearts supporters, in which I'm sure you're probably going to get less than that because of the time and the day.
Yeah, it's not ideal, obviously, being the Monday night. As you say, I think, you know, obviously, for someone that makes the journey most days from Edinburgh to Glasgow, and especially the nighttime games when I've been, it's a fair trek. And depending on what happens on that MA, you know, you could be a few hours making that journey. Also, the way the timings are, you know, I don't know what the train service would be like, which would obviously make it, if people are willing to travel by train, it's probably a difficult one to get home from that as well. So, yeah, it would have been a weekend game, obviously on a more traditional kickoff time, but it's not. And, you know, as you say, under the lights, so it'll be a good game. And a roundabout way, it probably does us a slight favour because it gives us a couple of days extra to recover because we have a very important game against Dundee United on Tuesday night as well to test for. So from that point of view, it actually probably slightly suited us in a way because it gives us an extra day or two recovery.
Yeah, you got Dundee United on Tuesday, which is tomorrow at the time of recording. United just 1 point ahead of Raith at the top. Morton, you're only 2 points behind Park Thistle in third just now. So talk me through how Morton have been doing so well this season. Sitting fourth at the time of recording, decent chance of playoffs, but been unbeaten in 16 games before that defeat to Cali Thistle at the weekend. That was your first defeat since November. So, you know, how has this Morton team been so successful? I know they were just missed out in the playoffs last season, so what can we expect from a Hearts perspective? What makes this Morton team tick, and when you're effective, how so?
Yeah, look, I think a lot of credit has to go to the manager and the way he sets himself out. You know, he's a very fiery character on the sidelines. You've seen him. He gets very animated, but you know, he's a very good motivator. You know, I think he's honest with the players. You know, what you see is what you get with him, which I think always bodes well for teams. You know, there's no nonsense, there's no backstabbing or lying, so everybody knows where they stand with him. He's got a good group about him. Andy Mullen, his assistant, who's obviously been about the game a long time, and Davey Scott, the goal coach. You know, so he's got a good group there. And first and foremost, you know, training's enjoyable. You know, we come in, they've got a smile on their face every day. Training's enjoyable. And, you know, I think that's important. When you're kind of playing championship level, you've not got a big squad. You know, you have only got a squad of 18, 19 to take from. You have to make sure, you know, everybody's enjoying it because you need to rely on everybody in these circumstances. You know, you don't have that luxury of a 20-plus man squad, plus maybe youth players that can come in and do a job. You know, it's kind of, that's all you've got. But yeah, I think the thing about our team this year is we've got fantastic balance in our squad. You know, we've got that balance of youth and experience. You know, people like Kurt Broadfoot, Alan Power, Grant Gillespie, you know, they've all played a lot of games. Probably when you actually go through most of the team, they've got a lot of players with Premiership experience. You know, there's a lot of boys that have experienced playing in the Premiership. So, you know, that bodes well. And as I say, we've got a lot of energy. I think a kind of misconception about Morton sometimes over the past few years where it's, you know, we're just a hoofball team. You know, I think that's the general consensus for a lot of team opposing fans that think it's just about a long ball, but we don't, you know, we mix it up. We've got good, as I say, we've got good balance in the team. But I think, first and foremost, we defend properly, we no-nonsense defending. But in the second half, in the attacking half, sorry, you know, we've got the freedom to go and play, and that's very much the case. You know, we've got a very mixed array of weapons. You know, we can mix up, we can be physical. But we could also play some good football. And you know, if you see any of our highlights and some of the goals we scored this year, we're definitely could play some good football. And I think, you know, that's been part of the success this year, is that we do have the balance that we can mix it up, and it's not all just one way. We can play a couple of different ways.
We remember Robbie Muirhead at Hearts. Some people might forget he was only 20 for most of the time that he was at the football club, 2016-17. But he seems to have found a club that fits for him now. 10 goals last season, 9 already this season. What kind of threat can he pose for Hearts and Craig Gordon on Monday?
Yeah, Robbie's, you know, a fantastic player. I remember, obviously, his spell at Hearts and come through at Kilmarnock and things like that. You know, he bounced about a lot when he was younger. You know, he always one of the ones that was a talented boy, and, you know, probably people thought, oh, a lot of talent, but just never quite hit the heights. You know, watching him this year, playing with him, you know, he's an excellent football player. Got a great left foot in him. You know, he's got a great shot. He's got a lot of power, a lot of accuracy. Will shoot for anywhere. And also a big, he's a big boy as well. You know, he'll mix up physically. He's actually better with the ball at his feet for a big man. But yeah, he's a talented young boy. And as I say, I think that's the thing. You know, he's got found a place where, you know, he's playing week in, week out. And sometimes that's all it takes, is just having someone that, you know, that'll trust in you. You know, give you a game week in, week out, no matter what. You know, we're not always going to be at a top level and maybe not always play well, but if you have a manager that trusts in you, and, you know, Robbie's probably benefited from that at Morton, and, you know, he might not always be his best, but he's always got a goal for it, and, you know, that's massive.
So in terms of the Cup, it's obviously a competition that you'll have many fond memories of, not just at Hearts. You did pretty well when you're over at Queen of the South on loan as well. In terms of this season in the Cup, where does this stand for Morton? You've obviously got a big push to try and get in those playoffs and try and obviously get them back into the top flight, but a quarter final against Hearts, is this a big game for Morton that they're going to be putting a lot into? You know, how far a cup run can take them, and financially as well, the rewards of that?
100%. You know, it's a massive game for us. You know, you're one game away for Hampden. As you alluded to, you know, I've been very fortunate myself, where I've been numerous times with Hearts, as you say, Queen of the South, Falkirk. You know, it's, but with that experience as well, you know, two of my three cup final appearances have been with Championship clubs, so I also know it's possible. You know, it's not easy, but you're going to have to beat the better teams at some point if you want to get there. So, you know, it's probably as good a draw we could have asked for in terms of being at home. You know, I think when you get to the quarterfinal stage and you see the teams that are left in the tournament, you know, none of the games are easy, and all you hope for is a home draw to kind of, you know, give you a bit of an equaliser. So yeah, we'll go into the game fully confident. You know, we know Hearts are flying. You know, they've been excellent themselves the last, what, few months. I think, you know, being a long winning or undefeated streak themselves up until last week. And, you know, we know it's going to be a really tough game. But, you know, it's also one we think, you know, we beat Motherwell in the last round at home. Why can't we do it again? And as you say, it'd be a massive achievement for the club, you know, to get to Hampden, chance to play at Hampden, and also, as you say, the financial benefits that come with that, you know, that'll help the club going forward. As I say, there's a lot of ambition at the club right now, especially coming through the manager. You know, he wants to win. He's a winner. The way he conducts himself, you know, that's a big part of it. And yeah, we'll be looking to go and win the game.
I want to speak about that Motherwell victory, 2-1 in the last round on the 9th of February. They came into that game on the back of a 5-0 win over Ross County, who got rid of Derek Adams as a result of that. And Motherwell were great that day, and I watched that match against Morton in the Cup, and I don't think it was that much of a shock. The way that you played and the way that you, Morton as a team, approached that game, whether there was complacency or not from Motherwell, I think that's probably disrespecting Morton. Is there any reason to suggest it'll be a similar performance from Morton? He's got you fit, so you'll be in the faces of the Hearts players. So what can we expect if it's not something similar from that victory over Motherwell from Morton?
Yeah, we, you know, we'll go about and set up the same way. We'll go to win the game. It'll not be a case of, you know, we'll sit in and try and defend and counter-attack. You know, we're better on the front foot and taking the game to teams. So I think that's what Hearts fans can definitely expect. I also think there's a little bit of, I think what people don't realise is the differences between the top end of the Championship and probably the bottom end of the SPL. There's not massive differences in terms
of
squad quality. Team quality. Like your starting 11s, there's not much. I think what, as I alluded to before, was it's squad sizes that's the biggest difference. And, you know, that it doesn't matter what team you look at the Championship, we all go through our good spells and bad spells. And there's no coincidence that the bad spells always coincide with teams when they're missing five or six players, because we just don't have that squad depth as maybe the top end of the Premiership clubs have. But yeah, there's not a great difference in quality. You know, the amount of players that have Premiership quality players that have probably dropped down to the Championship just for either more game time. You know, so the differences aren't that big. And definitely on a day, you know, we can definitely produce a result to upset on Monday night.
Your two at the back, Jack Baird and Dara O'Connor, were the two centre-backs against Motherwell, also the two centre-backs at the weekend. So if fit, the likelihood is they'll be the two centre-backs against Hearts. How do they stop Lauren Shankland?
Look, with great difficulty. I think that's the honest answer. You know, Lawrence has been unbelievable this year. What's it up to, 27 goals, is it?
For the season? Will you call him a shitebag if he doesn't take a penalty against you during goals and Hearts get a penalty kick?
If I'm selected to play, why not? I'm always up for a bit of mind games.
You've done well against Hearts with penalties, I think.
You have?
I think, yeah, you're right. I think I've saved... I said a few years back, I think I saved more penalties at Tynecastle once I left Hearts than I actually did when I was there. I came back and had a fantastic run of penalty saves, but unfortunately it was when I wasn't at Hearts. Lord Shankland's the best striker in the country right now. You know, his finishing's unbelievable. He's finished at the weekend again, fantastic. The one that's disallowed again, great finish. But, you know, I think a lot of what probably goes unnoticed is his actual overall gameplay. You know, the goals are obviously what you want for your striker, and it's his goal ratio this year is unreal. But what I think a lot of people don't realise is his actual overall build-up play. You know, he likes to play so well. He's such an intelligent football player. You know, the one I remember most recently it was the goal against Airdrie in the last round. You know, he drops deep into the midfield area, holds the ball up, plays it around the corner, you know, and he ends up, 10 seconds later, finishing off at the Airdrie box. And, you know, I think people don't realise how good a football player, or all-round football player he is. He's scoring goals for fun now, which is what you want for your striker, but yeah, he's such an intelligent football player, and you know, if we can stop him, you know, that'll go a long way for us being successful.
You talked about squad depth in the top flight, and there's probably not a better example of that than Hearts and goalkeepers right now. Some similarities with your situation, I suppose, at Morton this season, in terms of you got put out injured. Ryan Mullen came in playing well, so obviously kept his place. I know you've been back in because he's been out. Xander Clark and Craig Gordon, it's an interesting challenge, although you'd say maybe a welcome challenge for Stephen Naismith in terms of having two goalkeepers who could both feasibly be on the plane to Germany in the summer. What do you make of that situation? You think that does that help the goalkeepers, that pushes both of them, that they've got such good competition in that position?
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, probably most managers in the league would be delighted with that situation if they had two goalkeepers performing at that level. As you say, both of them arguably could be going to Germany with Scotland this summer. I can imagine Diego be champing a bit to get back in the team, but I think it's been a credit to Xander how he's performed since Craig's coming back. You know, I know there was a sticky patch at the beginning of the season for Hearts and maybe Xander a little bit. Not that I don't think he had really done anything wrong, but sometimes as a goalkeeper, it's not the fact that you're not making mistakes, it's sometimes you're just not making the big saves. And maybe that was the case at the beginning of the season, but I think, you know, since Craig's came back on the bench, Sanders definitely upped his game. And I think he had an excellent game at the weekend there. You know, obviously a big penalty stop in the first half, and, you know, he's produced a few good saves later on as well. So, yeah, I think, you know, Steve Naismith, yeah, as much as it's a problem, it's also, it's a good problem to have, isn't it? And obviously you've got arguably one of the best goalkeepers Scotland's ever produced in Craig sitting there waiting to come in. I'd imagine, I would say he'll be waiting patiently to try to get back in again, but knowing Craig, he'll not be patient at all.
So Hearts and Morton playing with each other, and it, although they've played three times in the Championship, that was during the COVID season, so there weren't any fans. So this will be the first time there've been fans at a Morton and Hearts competitive game since the 80s, because they hadn't met competitively since 88 until that that COVID season. Sandy Clark and Gary Mackay got the goals. Are we expecting a big Capello bounce for this one? Because a lot of Hearts fans of a certain generation, myself included, I've never been to a Capello match with fans involved. Are we expecting a big cup atmosphere on Monday?
Yeah, like I said before, you know, it's a proper old fashioned stadium. We've obviously been, the team's been doing well in the league, getting to the quarterfinal. So yeah, I expect there to be a healthy Morton turnout on Monday. And you know, it'll be a great atmosphere. You know, there's a lot of, as I say, you've got the main stand that you know seats everybody, but the rest of it's pretty much standing. So it's that old fashioned cup feel that you'll definitely get from it. And you know, it'll be one that I think players will enjoy. It'll be a different atmosphere to the big stadiums you go to. It'll be a different experience for a lot of the Hearts players, but you know, it's one I'm sure everybody will enjoy. You know, the Motherwell game was fantastic. I think they were trying to slightly raise the attendance for this game. You know, I think they cut themselves maybe just a little bit short last time, but I think they were looking at trying to expand the capacity for this game. So, yeah, you know, it'll be a great crowd, and, you know, a crowd that's going to be right on top of you. You know, obviously Tynecastle's very well known for that in terms of the stand, but, you know, this is, as I say, an old-fashioned stadium where fans are pretty much right next to you as you're taking throw-ins, taking corners and things like that. And, yeah, it'll be a good atmosphere on the night.
Well, obviously, we can't wish all the best for the game on Monday because our allegiances are different for that one. But we wish you all the best for the game against Dundee United. It may well have been played by the time folk are listening to this one. And for the rest of the season, hopefully, despite the cup disappointment you'll suffer at the hands of your former club, you can help Morton get to the playoffs and maybe, back up to the top flight. It's been a pleasure having you on, Jamie. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Laurie. Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome, Sam. Good to have you on.
And we'll speak soon.
Thank you. Cheers. Thank you, guys.
You're listening to Scarves Around the Funnel, sponsored by Forrest Hepburn and McDonald's Signs, who have been offering creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. So that was former Hearts goalkeeper and current Greenock Morton goalkeeper Jamie McDonald helping us preview the big cup game on Monday. We are pretty much out of time. We're deep into added time, extra time, about to have penalty kicks at this rate. So before we go, we will just have a quick score prediction for this one. This could be a potentially tough game. We spoke very briefly, Mark, about the pitch with Jamie. We know he's not going to go into it too much, being a current player at Morton, but this is going to be a difficult game for Hearts to try and impose their usual style, isn't it? It's going to be a physical Morton team who have a tricky pitch, shall we say, and Hearts are going to have to adapt a little, aren't they?
Yeah, but I think there's similarities with the Airdrie in the previous round. and we dealt with that very well, and I think we'll deal with this very well. I think we'll score first, and I think with Morton trying to push to get an equaliser, we'll then get a second late on, and Hearts will win 2-0. Lawrence Shanklin will be among the goal scorers.
Okay. How about you, Scott? What are you going for?
Yeah, I actually think we need a performance pretty similar to Celtic in terms of how we approach it. I think it's got to be balls into the channels. I think we've got to look to turn their back four. And it's all about maybe getting opportunities for set plays and long throwing situations like we did on Sunday. So I think if you see a little bit more of that where we played to the conditions, I can actually see us winning this maybe 3-0, to be honest.
Okay. You're gonna go with a goal scorer?
Let's go with George Grant.
George Grant, okay. I did fancy 2-0, so I go with the same as Mark for this one. I think it will be tough at times. I think they'll make it difficult. I think it could get into a bit of a battle at points in the game. They'll have a vociferous crowd behind them. They want to make it uncomfortable for Hearts, and I think they will at spells. I like to think our quality will tell. Mark's gone for Shanklin already, so and I do tend to avoid that one. So I am going to say in this game it'll be a set play. Stephen Kingsley. 2-0 Hearts, Stephen Kingsley get a goal. There we go.
Okay.
Whatever happens, hopefully Hearts get a result, whatever the scoreline is, and get through to the next round of the Cup. That's the main thing. We'll be back to discuss the game and the Cup draw, hoping the Hearts are in it. if they're not, then we probably won't go into the draw too much. And whatever else might come up over the next few days before our next episode. If you want to get in touch in the meantime, then simply drop us an email, podcast@scarvesaroundthefunnel.co.uk, or you can tweet us @AroundTheFunnel. Until next time, thanks for tuning in.